From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is a special edition of On Point with a live audience at historic Faneuil Hall in Boston. To our guests in the hall and listeners around the country, welcome to On Point Live. Thank you. 1 year ago, we were in the throes of election campaign season, about to choose our next president. Now, here we are. That president is Donald Trump. He has taken the country, the Oval Office, the presidency, place it has never been before. With tweet storms and off-the-teleprompter tirades, some welcome this. Many are worried, dismayed, some are outraged. Where have we come to? Where are we headed? This hour On Point, the state of the nation, from all kinds of angles, with CNN's Van Jones, best-selling author Celeste Ng, and singer-songwriter Josh Ritter. We are so happy to have all of you with us right here tonight. All this year, we've been taking the show out on the road, all over the country, listening, probing what's going on, what people are thinking. Now, here we are in Boston with great guests, a great audience, and questions from the hall and around the country. So, let's go. We're so happy you're here. With me on stage in historic Faneuil Hall, Celeste Ng. She's author of the fall's hot novel, the New York Times bestseller, just out last month, set in her hometown of Shaker Heights outside Cleveland. It's called Little Fires Everywhere. Her debut novel was Everything I Never Told You. She lives across the river here in Cambridge. It's great to have you, Celeste Ng. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Next, Van Jones is with us, CNN political contributor, host of the primetime special, The Messy Truth with Van Jones, a New York Times bestselling author. His latest, just out this week, is Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart, How We Come Together. Lawyer by training, a special advisor to the Obama White House, founded the social justice group, the Dream Corps. Van Jones, it is great to have you right here with us. And with us, singer-songwriter Josh Ritter, son of Idaho, out with a new album, his ninth, called Gathering. It's country, it's gospel, it's soul. Here's a taste. Thunderbolts, good night.
Before I met you when I was trying hard in love, I thought the sun was going down, but the sun
just a touch of the great Josh Ritter right there. Slant calls Josh Ritter a true keeper of the American folk lineage, a proud traditionalist. He's smart, humane, an artist. He's about to go on tour. Josh Ritter, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
There is so much to talk about, and it's great to have this great hall in the house. We've been in, I don't know, like a dozen cities around the country over this last year on our listening tour, and now we're right here. And we have a lot we want to ask you about and talk with you about tonight. We've got questions from around the country and from here in the hall. I want to just start incredibly, incredibly broadly. And at, Van, dive in. What is going on in this country? What is going on here?
Well, the end times, maybe. I don't know.
Some say yes, some say no. But
You know, it's. I think this is what happens when you have a bipartisan elite failure at the top of these political parties. For the past 30 years, both political parties have signed off on policies that really hurt tens of millions of Americans, whether you're talking about the trade policies, deregulating Wall Street, building prisons everywhere, getting into these wars. Both parties supported this direction, and it worked for some people, but for tens of millions of people, they've been hit sitting on a white-hot stove and hurt people holler. And whether you're talking about Black Lives Matter or whether you're talking about Occupy Wall Street or, on the other hand, the Tea Party movement or the Trump movement or the Bernie Sanders movement, you're seeing this rebellion in the country. And I think more rebellions are to come. And unfortunately, from my point of view, the wrong rebel won in November. And we're going to pay a cost for a while, but we're being tested now. And the character of the country, and frankly, the character of liberals and progressives, is being tested. Are we going to be bitter, or are we going to be better? are we going to focus on accusation and blame, or are we going to take some responsibility for the fact that, honestly, I don't know a single person who worked as hard in 2016 to stop Donald Trump as we worked in 2008 to stop McCain, or 2012 to stop Romney. There was a little bit of a letting our foot off the gas and thinking that we had it all wrapped up. And sometimes when you don't fight hard, you lose.
Van Jones, I know something about your politics. You're in the eye and ears of people around this country very often, and we know where you're coming from. Celeste and Josh, I know less about your politics, so I'm just very curious, and I'll come first to you, Celeste. And by the way, I just finished reading your terrific book, Little Fires Everywhere, and it's great. We'll talk about that. So I don't know where you're coming from, but what is going on in this country right now? We see so much passion. We see so much fear. We see anger. We have a president in a mold kind of all his own. What's happening?
Well, one of the things that I think is happening is we're sort of having this moment of reckoning with things that, as Van said, you know, we sort of thought, oh, but we got this. We're kind of doing okay. And we've put those issues to bed. I'm still.
When
sort of,
was that?
This is the thing. I don't think we ever actually were, but there was a period when, you know, when Barack Obama was elected where people said, oh, good, now racism is over, and they meant it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that now we're sort of realizing, like, oh, all these things that we thought we had overcome, we haven't at all. We're still dealing with sexism. If you look at the news about Harvey Weinstein, we're still dealing with racism in pretty much every front of what's going on in this country. There's, I think, a lot of feelings of, oh, we thought we could put the past behind us, and actually, of course, we can't put the past behind us. We're really, I think, kind of reckoning with the fact that a lot of these things that we're seeing happening now, you know, marches with, you know, neo-Nazis and torches, have always been with us. We just weren't looking at them. And, you know, sexual assault has always been with us. We just weren't talking about it. I feel like we're moving towards a point where now people aren't able to look away from that, and they have to sort of think about those things, and I'm hoping that we're actually going to start making changes in those things, because those things have been around for a long time.
Are we okay or not?
No. I'm sorry, I should sound less surprised, but I don't really know anybody who thinks that we're doing okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I think, you know, America is hard to do. And I think a lot of us forgot that. You know, we got in that Obama bubble bath, and we were just, oh man, this feels good. And that, you know, 8 years later you get out, you're kind of wrinkly and weak, and you're not really prepared to fight. And so you gotta remember, you know, democracy is hard, and it's hard work, and you can't take any of these elections off.
Josh Ritter, you're a wonderful musician. That sound that we've heard from you lately, your new album Gathering, is just terrific.
Thanks.
You get around the country with that. I mean, you know, Van says we're in an Obama bubble bath, but not everybody liked that bath. And the proof is kind of in the pudding of this last election.
Yeah.
So as you travel around the country, and I know you've got a big tour coming up, starting out in Dallas in just a few days, but what are you hearing from people? Now, I don't know. Maybe everybody who comes out to listen to you is, you know, Democrat, liberal. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But, what are you hearing? Not everybody thinks that the Obama years were so great. There's a whole lot of people who voted just the other way with Donald Trump.
Well, I come from Idaho, and that's like, it's a hard place to come from as a liberal. I'd say that you know, people have, you know, meeting a lot of people, and they ask you how do you incorporate our times into art? You know, how do you make art out of like such a tumultuous time? And I have to say I don't really know. You know, as an individual, aside from everything, I'm freaked out. You know, I'm freaked out. I feel
what
like,
freaks you out?
Well, I feel like we have a president who is actively waging war on the American people. I feel
What about all the people who voted for him?
There's a lot of talk of division in this country, and I have to say, like, at a certain point, you have to choose what you actually believe in, and like, I do not believe in a lot of those things. I have to say, I I feel like we are being that our rights are systematically being taken away from us every step of the way.
And I think it's important to note, too, that even a lot of the people who voted for Trump are not getting exactly what they thought. Now, that what they thought might also not have been great for a lot of the country, but I think if you look at the consistent efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, you had a lot of people saying, well, I'm fine, you know, I voted for Trump because he's just getting rid of Obamacare. He's and I have the Affordable Care Act, so I'm fine. And there's a little bit of a disconnect.
Not knowing the difference.
Yeah, not realizing that that was the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
So not everybody who voted for Donald Trump was just blind to what was going on.
Well, I think some people were maybe not thinking very clearly about how things were going to affect them or their own families or people that they knew or their neighbors.
I mean, maybe, but we get callers every day on this show who are stone cold Trump supporters, yeah. and still some have questions now, but still there's a lot. There's a ton of supporters.
Absolutely, and I think that I've been blessed to be able to go to West Virginia, Indiana, the red parts of Michigan, Pennsylvania, other places, and I've been surprised. You know, we really have almost two different countries now in terms of how people see things, and a lot of the people who voted for Trump are proud that they voted for him. And a lot of them,
sure,
they feel good about the vote because their media, lifts up, you know, all the things that that he's done that they feel good about.
Their media, the country's polarized, even
yes.
In media terms. We've got the music in our ears, which means we're going out for a short break. We are in the historic Faneuil Hall in Boston, where we're broadcast from every single day. When we're not out on the road, we've been out on the road a lot this year, with the great Van Jones, Josh Ritter, Celeste Ng. It is terrific to be here. We've got questions from here in the audience and from around the country. To the audience in the hall and all of our listeners across the land, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point Live.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook with Celeste Ng, Van Jones, Josh Ritter, and a live audience in Boston, and this is On Point Live. It's great to be here right in the city that we broadcast out of, Boston. We've been traveling all over the country this year. I know our listeners have been hearing that, and it's been fantastic. The welcome we've had in every city around this country, from Spokane to Detroit to Tampa and Milwaukee. We're going to be out in Iowa soon. We're going to be in, where are we, Atlanta, just in a few days. It has been a fantastic listening tour this year, and there is a lot to listen to. We kicked it off in Kent, Ohio. Kent State country, and that was fascinating all on its own, and we are still at it. We're listening closely because we feel, and the country knows, we are at an unbelievably wild time in this country. No matter where you come down politically, this feels like times we have not seen before. Van Jones is with us. He's author of, you know him from CNN, political contributor there. You know him from that and The Messy Truth with Van Jones there. He's out with a new book, Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart, How We Come Together. Celeste Ng is with us, terrific novelist, and she's just out with her latest. This is a daughter of, Ohio, growing up. Her new book is set in the one and only Shaker Heights, out just on the edge of Cleveland there. It's called Little Fires Everywhere, and we're so happy to have her with us. Josh Ritter has been a welcome guest on this show before, fantastic musical artist, an artist in every sense of the word, acclaimed songwriter, musician, 20-year career, who just released his 9th album. It's called Gathering, just out, and he's just about to head out on tour himself for Look for Him around the country. There is so much I want to dive into here, and we've got so many questions from the audience, and really that's what it comes down to, and I want to get right there. Here's a question from our audience here tonight in historic Fennel. I mean, this goes back to 1760-something. We've got this fantastic, huge mural behind us on the wall, Liberty and Union, now and forever. You know, that's one of those things that you might add the famous line, if you can keep it, right? That's how it feels these days, and that is pretty wild. Here's a question from our audience in historic Fennel Hall. Why is so much of America afraid of globalization? This is a world we live in. Van, let me put that to you.
Well, you know, there's a reality here. For those of us who have benefited from globalization, we are essentially diffuse and ungrateful. It's not like we, you know, walk around saying, I'm so happy about globalization because I got this, you know, cheaper cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. The people who are the losers under globalization are concentrated and pissed because they are looking at hollowed out towns. They are looking at empty factories. And for some of them, for them, globalization means the jobs go to a foreign country and the people from that foreign country come here. And there's a double whammy for them, and that it makes them uncomfortable.
Compete abroad, compete here, yeah. And things change.
And change is hard for people. So I think that for those of us who are progressives, who, if you are a progressive winner in this new arrangement, there was a period of time, I think, until November, where there was a level of tone deafness. We said a lot about, hey, we're creating all these jobs now, and everything's going really well. We didn't think about the fact that the jobs that left were $50 an hour jobs or $40 mm-hmm. an hour jobs. Mm-hmm. The jobs we were creating were $18 an hour jobs. Those kinds
and
of...
And not all 18.
And not all 18, yeah. And so those kinds of things meant that there was, a disconnect. And people, when the right wing says that these liberal elites are out of touch, we get very offended and, you know, say, how dare they say that? Now pass me my kale. And mm-hmm. and then it doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't work. So I think that with every breakdown, there's an opportunity for a breakthrough. I've been, like I said, very blessed to get a chance to go to parts of the country I hadn't been to. And I'm going to say very clearly, and I wrote a book about it, to try to...
You got it right here, Beyond the Messy Truth.
Yeah, to try to bring some of this stuff forward. I'm proud of Democrats, I'm proud of progressives for bringing into the circle folks who have been shut out for too long. LGBTQ, Muslim, immigrant, African-American, female, etc.
Okay.
But I think we drew our circle slightly too small, and there were some people who were hurting who didn't feel that they had a place inside our circle, and they went someplace else. And I think as much as we don't like it, the next time we got to draw our circle a little bit bigger. And be even more inclusive than we have been if we want to be able to get out of the situation we're in.
Van Jones. Widen that circle. In a democracy, in this democracy, we always have to be for that. I mean, the questions from the audience are as good or better than mine. And let me put this one to you, Josh. I mean, you get out, you tour, you're going to be touring all over the place with this great new album, Gathering. Just a very simple question. Why is our society so divided? Well, yeah, but that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, voice of God, you can answer.
Yeah, it's incredibly fractured in so many different directions. That's only in comparison to I can answer in.
Sing if you want. I know you're really good.
In terms of let's just say music. Yeah. Like my first record came out in 1999, the first year that music was free to everybody, mm-hmm. and that meant that you could go online and get any music you wanted from anybody anywhere whenever you wanted.
Okay.
Whatever your taste was, you could find it. And that meant that you could stay within your taste as much as possible. You didn't have to listen to anything you didn't like. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to spend any time like getting used to any music that you wouldn't hear normally. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's happened in a lot of arenas. You know, you are able to listen and to spend time and to ingest the opinions and voices that you agree with, without having to spend any time trying to figure out what the hell is going on with.
And you can call the rest fake news.
You can call it whatever. Yeah, you can call it fake news. You can call it just pop music, whatever you want to call it. But the fact But the fact is that it's real, that there are people that are learning about things from all kinds of different points of view, and you have to really work really hard to get outside of your own little shell.
I mean, and it's not just the right wing or the left wing. You talk about technology, and if you follow somebody, if you're on Twitter, if you're on Instagram, and you follow a liberal, it will then suggest that you follow 5 more liberals,
yeah,
and then 100 more liberals, and 1,000 more liberals, and then your social media feed will be wonderful. You see, it'll just completely reaffirm
all what you want to hear.
Look, everybody agrees with me, man. But if you had followed a Republican, then you would have wound up with the suggestion being 1,000 Republicans. So even our technology, which really should be uniting us, I feel sometimes is actually further dividing us.
I agree.
Celeste, totally, yeah. And you've been on book tour with Little Fires Everywhere. It's a terrific, terrific story. It is set right there in Shaker Heights, where you spent some time growing up outside of Cleveland. But you've been talking to people all over the place. Does everybody think that they've got the only reality and everybody else is cuckoo?
Well, one of the things that I'm starting to see as we have this discussion is why you asked a novelist on the panel, which I was sort of delighted to get the chance to be on the show. But
We're very broad-minded people here.
Well, I think this is useful because I feel like Van's able to give that sort of really big kind of global picture from the top down, and I, as a novelist, my stock in trade is human beings, and I work from the sort of individual upwards. And so when I'm thinking about... when I'm thinking about characters, when I'm thinking about what this question about why are people afraid of globalization, I'm sort of thinking about the ways that globalization...
Wait, is that what this is all about? This is all about globalization, what's happening in our country
right now? No, I think it's about the questions of the big picture versus the small picture is where I'm going with this. So as a novelist, I'm trying to think about individual people, and I'm trying to get people to, as Josh is saying, get inside somebody else's head. Mm-hmm. The novel is one of the forms that can do that and can make you feel their feelings and think their thoughts
in a way that other things can't. Take
right?
us in.
And when you do that, when you start interacting with someone or you're thinking on the individual level, it's a lot easier to see them as a person. It's a lot easier to see what they're thinking about. It's a lot easier to reconcile, like Van, what you're saying, you don't have this idea of like, oh, there's all these other people. It's like, oh, this person that I'm talking to. And you have an opinion and you can share it, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't find common ground, you at least sort of understand what that other person is saying. And I think that when you're looking at, a big perspective where you're like, oh, this other party does that, or this other group does this, when you start thinking in terms of whole groups, you lose that sense of individuals, and it's then very hard to connect to that other group. You start thinking about classes. You start, not in the class race sort of scenario, but you think about huge categories of people that all seem kind of uniform to you. And I think that's part of why people start to get really afraid, and also why people start to divide themselves up, and they start to say, well, that other group looks really scary. I have to go over here with people who I know, individual people
that
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, do we stop talking at that point?
No, I think that's when we need to talk more. One of the things that I'm finding as I go around and I talk to people about books, I don't just talk about my own book, but I talk about other books that they like to read, and that a lot of times that experience of just being asked to consider what it's like to be somebody else is not something that we're asked to do in our everyday life. And the basic term for that is just empathy. But thinking about why other people might act the way they do is something that I feel like we're not doing very much right now on any level, in the government or a lot of times on the individual level. And that's a lot of the problem, I think, of what's going on.
Why not, Van? Why have we come to this polarized point where maybe we're not even talking with each other? I mean, hear it on point. It's tough sometimes, but on this show, we have callers from right across the political spectrum, and we are very glad for that. There are not enough convening spaces where everyone feels at least respected. Come on in, we'll hear you out. Now, it turns out, here tonight, we've got a kind of a... you guys are all coming from from a more liberal side of the equation, but in the course of this tour around the country that we've been on, our listening tour, we've heard from all sorts of folks, and we hear from them every day. But what leaves us in this situation, Van, where... people just aren't buying the other.
Well, I think that, again, it's a country that has 300... Let's just not underestimate the heroism of our own cause as Americans. We have 300 million people here.
Plus.
Plus.
Yeah.
Every color, every faith, every gender expression, every sexuality, every kind of human being ever born in one country, mm-hmm. which we're trying to run as a democracy, and we mostly get along.
But this has been our point of pride. I mean, we've fought, we've had civil war, we've had civil rights, we've had every... But I think a lot of people came into this century, and you know, for or against, when Barack Obama won, I thought a lot of people thought, as somebody was saying earlier here we go, we're over the hump, we got it, we're golden. We can all live together and it's going to be great.
Well, yeah, it just that's sort of a... We have always zigzagged a little bit. We fought the Civil War, we did Reconstruction, everybody thought everything was going to be perfect, and then we swung backwards and we were 100 years of segregation, which is another word way of talking about terrorism in the United States against the black population for a century before you got the Civil Rights Movement and we got, you know, a few lurches forward. So this pendulum swings back and forth. The center does tend to move over time in the right direction, but it's not a linear process. And what happens is change is hard. Change is hard for people. And for a progressive like me, I'm trying to shove a lot of change through the system. I'm trying to shove change when it comes to marriage, when it comes to gender roles, mm-hmm. when it comes to racial expectations. There's geopolitical changes. There's technology changes coming. And everybody doesn't deal well with change. And when you have a certain group of people who are expected to see their situation change a bunch, culturally, socially, say white guys, and they don't like it, it puts us in an awkward situation.
Who's us? Everybody?
Progressives.
Okay.
Progressives, because then you got to say to yourself, well, you can say, well, you guys have had it all, you know, good and own your privilege and shut up. And then it turns out they don't like that so much.
Yeah, who would?
And maybe that actually makes it harder for them to adapt to the changes, and maybe it makes it easier for Donald Trump to come in and say, well, these people don't like you very much, and I like you quite a lot, and be on my team. And so we have to now do some introspection. I talk about it in my book. Mm-hmm. We've got to look at how are we going to do change. I don't want to back off of change. But you said the word empathy. I think that sometimes we, as progressives, cut the cord of empathy with that working class white guy, or maybe he's not working class white guy, but somebody who may just not yet feel comfortable. And if we do that, and then they cut the cord too, mm-hmm. then you've got a challenge. And democracies can fail. Democracy is hard to do.
Democracies can fail.
They can fail. They usually
God
fail.
God forbid.
They usually fail. You have 10,000 years of human history. Mm-hmm. It is rare for them to succeed.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes we underestimate the heroism of our own cause. And so we've got to push hard for change. We shouldn't back off at all. And at the same time, we got to be a little bit more understanding. I'm going to say this and I'll be quiet. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of my 20s in Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. It was, you know, black and working class. And now Silicon Valley's about 30 minutes south of there. Mm-hmm. And now all these Google employees and stuff live up there. And when I go to West Oakland, it's kale and yoga everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... And sometimes I think to myself, I liked Oakland the way that it was. Why are they changing it? And I think mm-hmm. to myself, if I could build a wall...
Oh boy,
and I
go.
Could make Silicon Valley pay for it, I might do that.
Oh,
I might do that. So I'm just saying, let's understand each other a little bit.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we should back off, but let's understand each other better.
Just saying, Josh, you... yeah, build a wall around wherever,
Oakland.
You know. Oakland, all right. No beamers in here. I don't think that's going to happen. It's a little late. I mean, you're performing all over, Josh.
Yeah.
What are you feeling when you hear it reflect back from the crowd? I mean, you're in a folk tradition. It's supposed to be open to everybody. Do
sure.
we still share? Do we still share that kind of folk American taproot?
I think that one of... Well, I have to say, like...
More I'm, than folk, but you know what I mean.
Sure. It goes beyond you know, kind of a sharing a tradition in music, although I feel that one of the amazing things about, well, being here tonight and playing concerts and being in groups of people where we are all sometimes strangers to each other, but we're all here for a reason. You know, we're all here to see each other and to see each other taking part in something that's bigger than us. It's just so important right now to have this like kind of civic discourse and be allowed to like sing a song in a room or have a discussion like we're having right now.
A concert can pull that out, and Josh Ritter is great at that. His new album is Gathering. A radio show that goes on the road can pull that out. We've been all over the country tonight. We are in Boston. Van Jones is with us. His new book is Beyond the Messy Truth. Celeste Ng is here. Her terrific new novel is Little Fires Everywhere, set in Ohio, Shaker Heights, right outside of Cleveland. We've got a great audience in the hall tonight. Lots of questions here. We will go to them. So terrific to be here from Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point Live. From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook with a beautiful live audience at the historic Faneuil Hall in Boston, and this is On Point Live. We've got a great crowd in the hall tonight. We've been touring all this year, all over this country, listening to what Americans are thinking about what is going on with our politics, with our culture, with our understanding of the past and present, with our understanding of the future. We've got a great panel with us here tonight in Boston. Celeste Ng is here. She is author of the New York Times bestseller, just out, it's terrific, Little Fires Everywhere. Fantastic to have you with us, Celeste. Van Jones is with us. He's out with a new book, Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart, How We Come Together. You know him from CNN and much more. Josh Ritter is with us, and we'll hear more of his music at the end of this, before this hour is over, for those of you out there listening. His latest album is Gathering. It is just terrific. Collaborated with Bob Weir, founding member of the Grateful Dead, on this album. It's just a terrific album. We've got a great audience in the hall. We've got lots of questions from the hall. And let's just dive right in. I mean, we have heard from Republicans, we have heard from Democrats, we've heard from liberals, we've heard from you name it, you know, in the course of this year of touring around the country. Here's a question, and this is very political. I'm going to put it to you, Celeste. It's a long one, but it's worthy. The Republican Party, here's a question from the audience in this very historic hall in Boston. The Republican Party has historically been the party of liberty and free speech. But now they're rallying behind President Trump's calls to force NFL protesters to stand and revoke NBC's license for publishing stories they don't agree with. They don't agree with David French, who has accused them of unlearning liberty. That's a pretty serious charge. What is the future of the Republican Party, and who wins the battle for its soul? You're a novelist. Do some projection here. Come on.
Well, one of the things that I find that I write about, especially in my new novel, is the ways that I think we believe that we have principles that are sort of guiding stars, and that we live by those principles and we follow them right up until the moment that we get uncomfortable and people that we love or our lives get affected, and then those rigid principles become very bendy. And I feel like that's a little bit like what's happened to the Republican Party, that they had these ideas where they're like, yes, we're the party of liberty and free speech, until it comes to people who we find uncomfortable exercising their rights to free speech, like largely black people. Then suddenly they're like, no, it's not free speech. If you take a knee, that's disrespectful. And so it's amazing the corners.
Like maybe the NFL stuff these days.
Yes, exactly. It was, to put one example, you take like Jemahl Hill and the fact
the
that
ESPN
she's been
commentator
ESPN commentator who's been criticized for speaking what she thinks, basically.
And is off the air right now.
Yes, and so she's basically, you know, she's been taken off the air. And I think that we a lot of times think, oh, yeah, we believe in free speech right up until we don't anymore. And suddenly we're saying to people, well, no, you're not doing it the right way. You're not doing free speech the way that I want you to do it. So I don't know where the future of the Republican Party is, but I feel like more and more people are starting to see the hypocrisies that happen when you have a president who is saying, well, you're disrespecting the nation by taking a knee, and you should, you know, we should maybe pull the license of NBC because they're being so critical and then at the same time is saying, but I'm here to defend the Constitution. I think the transparency there is, the hypocrisy there is getting sort of more and more transparent.
Van, I mean, you have a lot to say about conservatives in your new book, Beyond the Messy Truth, but you also have an open letter to liberals in here. You want to talk about principles getting bendy. You've got some talking to liberal Americans about what they might need to think about.
Right, yeah. In the book, I have an open letter to conservatives and an open letter to liberals. To the conservatives, to your point, I invite them to be more conservative.
Meaning?
Meaning, right now I think we have an anti-liberal Republican Party.
Meaning?
That they, the unifying principle is to attack liberal ideas, institutions, individuals. It's not so much about, as the best I can tell, lifting up the true, proud history of conservatism. Conservatives would be the first to defend our democracy from foreign interference. But you aren't seeing that when it comes to Russia right now. Certainly conservatives would be very concerned about the government poking itself into the private, you know, NFL decisions or private broadcaster decisions. So we need actually, I want, if you're a Republican, I say please stay a Republican, just vote for better Republicans, because that's really, I think, going to be important. For the liberals, I think that, as I was kind of hinting at earlier, we see ourselves as these incredibly inclusive and tolerant people, but not of people that we think of as intolerant. And so that creates this problem for us where we're sometimes, I think, coming across as anti-free speech for conservatives when they come to campuses. And we sometimes create leave the impression that we want the campuses to not just be physically safe spaces, but emotionally safe spaces. And
is that all it is for Democrats, that they're just, you know, not friendly enough toward intolerant people?
No, I think that...
that seems like a pretty... That's all the problem Democrats have in this equation?
No, I mean, I wrote a whole book, so...
I got it right here, baby.
It's called The Messy Truth. Beyond the Messy Truth. I think we have a ton of problems, but I think one of the problems that we have is that we have been, I think, misleading our young people and saying that we want these campuses to be emotionally safe spaces. I don't want the students to be... I want them to be physically safe. I don't want anybody targeted, bullied, no sexual harassment, no racial slurs directed at you. But I want you to be emotionally strong. I actually want you to be offended every single day you're on a campus, because that's how you're going to learn to marshal your argument, to calm and center yourself, and to be able to prevail in a real debate. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that I think we're not getting right as progressives, but it all stacks up to being sometimes elitist, precious, obnoxious, and hard to vote for if you don't fit into a certain category.
Josh, I mean, as a musician, you got a terrific new album out, Gathering, and I know you're headed off on this huge tour, but touring is what you've done so much of in your big career. I mean, these days, when you're out and around the country, what are you hearing from people? I'm sure they flock and they talk to you. You're an Idaho kid who's lived around the country, and now here you are. What do you hear when you're out, you know, and it's after the concert or before, you're talking with people about their fears about this moment, or their hopes?
Well, I can't really speak for my audience. I'd have to say that I speak for myself when I say that, like, I see something happening. You know, I'm here on stage. I'm a 40-year-old straight white guy. Mm-hmm. Like, the game is rigged in my favor, you know, and I realize that. And I feel like a lot of people realize that, and it makes them either nervous or it makes them mad as hell. You know, I've got a daughter who's 4.5. I don't want her to grow up seeing the kind of disparity that I see. And I feel that in my life, I see, you know, a lot of people who feel that way as well, and I want to project that. You know, I feel that it's important to recognize who you are and what you personally stand for. It's an incredibly trying and interesting and strange time to be an American.
Josh, I love that you said that, because I feel like that's a really hard thing for a lot of people to say, is that I have this privilege and I kind of own it, and I recognize that I'm part of the problem, or at least that I benefit from the way that things are set up. And I feel like that goes to your point, Van, about one of the things that I think that liberals or progressives are having trouble with is a lot of times sort of recognizing the ways in which they also are part of the problem. It's much easier to say, like, well, it's because conservatives are doing this, but I think that a lot of times that progressives are very quick to condemn other people who don't agree with them.
So define how they're part of the problem. How would you define that, Celeste?
Well, I think everybody's got blind spots. And yeah. A lot of times, I think you can see it happening with the events of the past few days, where, for example, you see the allegations of sexual assault and harassment coming out.
Harvey Weinstein.
And Rose McGowan, who is an actress who's accused him of assaulting her, mm-hmm. was blocked from Twitter. Her Twitter account was shut down for a little bit. And there's this sudden movement among a certain subset of women saying, we're going to boycott Twitter to stand in solidarity with Rose, mm-hmm. which I think is a wonderful thing, but at the same time doesn't recognize that there are whole classes of women, largely women of color, who are often silenced and for whom choosing to be silent is not really a viable option. And you see suddenly that there is this disparity where we can't just talk about women, that we're mm-hmm. talking about different groups of women and their interests don't always align with each other. And that's a thing that progressives have to recognize, that sometimes what helps one group is going to hurt another group. And it's really hard for progressives to say that, I think, because we want to say, no, we're helping everybody. Everybody's going to be better, and we're all in this together. And the fact is that a lot of times our interests are not aligned, and it's hard to acknowledge that.
I mean, sitting here tonight, you know, Josh, you're a white guy. I'm a white guy. Van, African-American. Celeste, Asian-American, Chinese-American. I think for a lot of liberals in the Obama years, it felt like, oh boy, here we go. You know, the beautiful country lies before us. It's going to be one big, amazing America and the rainbow. Is that dream slipping away? Is it just on ice for a minute? Do we get back to it? Do we crack further apart, Van?
I think it's... The wheel is still in spin, as a great folk singer once said, Bob Dylan. You know, the wheel is still in spin on that. I think it's up to us. I don't accept that the present level of hostility is inevitable or sustainable. But I do think liberals might do better to consider that we may be in for 8 years of this, and that... which is very, very hard for people to understand. But let me just suggest, we say that Donald Trump is crazy as progressives. There's maybe some evidence there. But real crazy is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Liberals have been doing exactly the same thing with Donald Trump since he came down the escalator. He's unacceptable, he's a bigot, he's a sexist, he's unprepared, he's bad tempered, he's unacceptable, he's a bigot, he's unprepared. Literally the same thing for 2 years with no effect on anybody but us, i.e. making ourselves more miserable and less attractive to be around. That's basically what we've been able to achieve. So... So I would just suggest that this might be a time to kind of say, you know, after a year of this, or 2 years of it, that maybe we should bring the grieving to a close, a respectful close, and then try to rediscover a pathway to hope. And part of that has to be about not just being part of a politics of accusation, but also being a part of a politics of confession.
Do you think that means that we should stop talking about the things that happen that are evidence of bigotry or that are evidence? I mean, how do we balance those two things? Because I see what you mean, but I also feel like when you part of being a progressive in a lot of ways is the idea that when you see a wrong happening, you call it out because that's part of how you draw attention to it. And I don't know how to balance those two things.
Well, man, look, I'm going to tell you. Can we call people out all dadgum day? Can we call somebody up? Can we call somebody in? Does it always have to be this attack, attack, attack? I'm African American. I've been black almost my whole life. For about 6 months, I was into YouTube, so that doesn't count. But otherwise, I've been black my whole life. I understand why we want to, why we need to stick up for these constituencies, and we need to defend the vulnerable, and we need to fight racism and sexism. I've spent my whole life doing that. And there's some stuff we're just going to fight about. But you can't only fight and have a country. And my problem is that we now are at a point where we won't even, we're so busy fighting about where we don't agree that we won't even work together where we do agree. We all agree in this country, this opioid addiction crisis is horrible. People are dying by the wheelbarrow. It has to stop. We all agree the criminal justice system is an embarrassment and a tragedy. We all agree we're not preparing this next generation of young people for these high-tech jobs of tomorrow. There's common ground beyond the battleground. Maybe we can fight from like 9 to noon, and then from noon to 3 do something, and then fight some more. But can we ever?
I guess.
Our time is very short.
Yeah. I see your point. I guess I come at it sort of thinking, well, it would be nice to feel like we could have some common ground, but when you say, yeah, the criminal justice system is in terrible shape, and yet you have police officers who are not having any consequences for shooting unarmed civilians.
Celeste,
you know, what do you do?
We're going to have to take that right off the air. We'll take that to the sidelines. This has gone too fast, and it's been great to be here with you all in Historic Faneuil Hall. Just a terrific audience tonight and terrific guest, Van Jones, author of Beyond the Messy Truth, How We Came Apart, How We Come Together. Thank you so much for being with us. Celeste Ng, author of Little Fires Everywhere. I just finished it. It is awesome. Fantastic. Thank you, Josh Ritter, who's blessed us with your music. We're going to hear some more. Thank you so much for being with us. To our audience in the hall and our audience around the country, here in Boston and all over these United States, it's so great to have all of you with us here. How fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point Live.
Our show today was taped in front of a live audience at Faneuil Hall at Hub Week in Boston. We go out with a live performance from Josh Ritter. Here's When Will I Be Changed from his new album, Gathering. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
For a while as he is waiting to be changed. When, oh, when will I be changed?